So how did you feel about Christmas being the next head of household and your prospects there?
Well, I said, all right, well, I've got some cleanup to do. I mean, I was sitting there and I was like, you know, this is the, you know, I think really when you think about the way that I, you know, played it, I really think that the very apt comparison, you know, to say that Destroy by Prodigy was going off in my head basically during that entire 3-day span is pretty accurate. The way that Junsoc plays ID Exchange, it has that vibe to me where he's trying to get Kacer to do something that really it doesn't. There's nothing really in it for Kacer, right? Like Junsoc's idea, you know, we're gonna go heavy into Genius spoilers here, but you know, Junsoc's idea is, Kyunghoon, if you have the convict and you feel like risking your life, you know, do this weird sequence of trades, and then the convict's gonna just come back to you. Like you're not ditching it, but I'll just have all the points and I'll be the sole winner. Junsoc saying, like, why would you do this? Junsoc, I hate the Big Alliance. Ian, why would you do this? I hate the Kids Alliance.
Yeah.
The parallels are there. I just didn't want to go to Jury House. I'm like, I would much rather just lose. And if that's how it has to be, I'm not saying like, you know, I'm going to volunteer to go. You know, but like I'm making a play now because this is it. Unless I want to be here until November. In Jury House or whatever. You know, I'm just sitting here. I'm like, this is it. I'm taking the initiative, and I'm gonna just try to galvanize the outsiders. If it doesn't work, then screw it. But I'm trying to forge an initiative. I'm trying to take the initiative here.
So. Potentially some good news then for you when flipping the game on its head is the goal. I believe week 5 is when these secret powers start coming into play. How did that end up shaking things up?
I do actually want to go into a little bit, Kacer does blow things up in his speech.
Yeah.
Gets traced back to like me through Bailey apparently ran off and told Cody. Apparently Kacer also inadvertently like threw me under the bus somehow. Like I remember thinking to myself, like, should I be more careful with talking to Kacer? Like he won't just run off and tell the wrong person this information, right? And then my immediate thought is, dude worked for Facebook. He's smarter than that. He's not gonna do that. And then he did. So Christmas wins HOH. Now this is really where I think we're talking about efficiency in terms of HOH wins goes. My brain going into this is going to be real efficient to win. That bag of chips comes out and we're determining the starting positions for that knockout game. And all my mind is trained on knowing exactly how this draw works is do not draw chip 1 or 2. I draw chip 2. And
shout out Jinho.
Yeah, straight up. I wanted to flick that chip and just fling it across the room. I was so incredibly tilted because I now knew that we are playing a game that is a signaling game. If I want to go balls out for this and try to win this HOH, I am going to have to call people out. And if Group A is expecting me to call out these people and Group B is expecting me to call out these people and I am doing neither of those things for whichever group, you know, whatever. This is where I think to myself, anything that I've done up to this point, I can clean up. I know exactly what angle I'm taking here to clean up this mess if things go haywire. When it is that game and I am now starting that chain of callouts, I realize that I am going to probably have to go perfect, 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 perfect on every single one of these stupid Instagram filter boards that I realize that me getting that question right and trading it for a 1 in 9 chance at HOH is mathematically not there. So as efficient as this HOH would be, I have no choice after that chip draw but to throw it right up in the air and just take whatever comes. It that moment, I mean, when I drew that fucking chip out of the bag, that was probably the most frustrated I had been in two seasons of playing Big Brother with any sort of chip draw, competition win, outcome, anything. I was fearless
I
internally.
remember we got as it was
Yeah,
cutting
teaser,
away.
Kevin and I were starting. That was literally the worst fucking draw it could have been.
All of Twitter was heartbroken when they saw the starting draw.
I mean, I wanted to puke. I was, I mean, and that's the thing, getting the question right just knocks out a number, right?
Right, exactly. Yes.
I mean, it's just like one of those moments where I think about could anything, was this season just like every single thing other than the Christmas winning safety suite, which, you know, social work had to be put into that even to make that happen. So it's like, you know, yeah, it's a great outcome, it's a good shot, but like it's just one of those things where it's like, is, you know, am I ever gonna get a decent role here?
It's
But like,
kind of like the same way you were talking about how Cody lives such a blessed life in the Big Brother house that like just getting information at the wrong time is like offensive to him. You are sitting over here needing to go perfect, 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 perfect to have any chance of winning this, as Christmas is going to win without getting a single question right, the same way in BB19 she won the sprinting competition with a broken leg. Like, think about being in that kind of position entering a competition.
I mean, in fairness, I will say, in Big Brother 14, in the middle game, like everyone would go outside and be nervous about who would HOH, and I would basically give no fucks, right? Like I mean, there were just, I mean, my spot was just so cush weeks 4, 5, and you know, to an extent 6, where I was just like, meh, whatever,
Yeah.
doesn't matter to me, I don't care, you know. I mean, everyone else is all nervous. That, I mean, it just this time it was just a very different experience in that sense. Like, you know, I thought about it like, you know, I just was like, I it's superbly different than last time. And so, I mean, I'm thinking when Dave on and Christmas are the last two up there, I'm just thinking like, please fucking bink this. Dave on has gotten a few questions right. I've not called her out. Other people have called her out. I know she's going to put up Cody and maybe Tyler, possibly Nicole. Please fucking bink this thing. She buzzes in. I'm like, okay, we got it. And then it's fucking wrong. Oh, man. Oh, man. That is just
Yeah.
those moments where it's just like, ah, ooh. Like, it's just sickeningly frustrating. Sickeningly frustrating when that shit happens, because like I said, I'm just saying, look, this is going to go one of two ways. One, I am going to be set up very nicely for a long time, and the other one, this is just going to be the end of it probably, which, fine, I don't have to go to jury, but I'm not playing to lose this round. I mean, yeah, I want to stay in if possible, but like, I'm just saying, like, if there's going to be a time to go, it's now. And it's like, it's just inherently frustrating because I think about it, like, I would have had a nice spot and I would have looked like a fucking genius if Dave Juan makes that thing. I mean, there is just no, I mean, no,
Yeah,
you know.
it's so funny to compare this to last time after BB14, and this is one of the things that in 2012 and to this day I have loved about you is your willingness to be self-reflective and everything. And in 2012 you were very eager to acknowledge here were several different points in the game where if I didn't get extremely lucky, this would not have gone my way. And it's so funny that, like, in the other timelines, it's even potentially arguable that this is, like, frustrating enough to counterbalance that. Like, having
Oh,
every
yeah.
single thing break as wrong as possible is so hard.
I mean, yeah, like, I think I remember, like, saying to myself in jury house, it's like, man, I really had to do a lot of work to somehow end up with a net zero luck factor in Big Brother, but I managed to find a way. I mean, like, it's just, I mean, dude, this is interesting. So Christmas wins this HOH, and as we're walking inside to the yard, to my shock surprise, Christmas looks at me and she goes, "You're totally safe." I'm sitting there and I'm thinking in my brain, I'm like, "Wait, what? How is that even po wait, huh? Am I did I just mishear that or something?" I swear to you, she says this to me, and I'm thinking in my brain, like, I just don't know if I'm just being set up for some like massive blindside at the nomination ceremony for no reason. But I'm just sitting there and I'm like, okay, all right, cool. Fine with me. But I know I've got some cleanup to do because I remember, like, I was picking out what socks I was gonna wear for the live episode with and asking Nicole F for advice. And I noticed, like, she seemed very cold toward me. And I was like, I think she is caught wind, basically. And she confronts me in the storage room. And to make the apt reference to the genius, right? Like of how I'm, Kyung-hoon or Jun-seok, right? This is that confrontation in the storage room, which I imagine had to make air. This is my Kyung-hoon putting the notebook over his face after just completely fucking Ah Young raw moment, where I'm just like, I'm just like, oh fuck, this is just this is not a good look. That being said, I'm pretty confident that I can clean this shit up. And I recognize, so Bailey's getting a little on me, Davon is getting on me, Nicole F's getting on me. I'm just acting like I just have no idea what's going on. Nicole's like, "Would you go in front of Bailey and say this?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure." And I'm just like, "Well, I thought you two had a final two deal." Just like throwing random shit out there just to see if anything sticks. Because I'm kind of just realizing, like, my spot's dire despite the HOH telling me I'm safe. I don't feel comfortable. I go in the D. I guess that day when Kaser left, I was crying in the DR before the eviction quite a bit, where I'm just like, I'm really getting sick of this because there were, like, basically with that week four, I basically looked at Kaser and I said, it's either him or me. And I don't want it to be me. And I'm getting sick of having to play this way where I don't have any control. And I'm just tired of playing defense all the time. And it's just like, at this point, I am like really getting to a point where I'm just frustrated and just like checking out. And then Bailey and I have our conversation in which I mix, I'm, you know, it's getting a little bit tense. I felt like damage control was going, with her, not good, but well enough that I was probably going to slide out of this. And then I mix up her and Day's names. And I mean, it is at that moment where I am like, all right, I think I've had enough of this. I'm kind of wanting to just get the F out of here. I'm getting kind of, that to me is just like a moment where I'm like, oh fuck, oh fuck, oh fuck. This is spiraling. I don't want to do this anymore. It kind of goes back to the, do I really want to be good at do you to be good at Big Brother? Like, I'm going, basically that night, all I am doing really is just gaslighting her and gaslighting Nicole F to an extent that it feels disgusting. You feel like the biggest scumbag piece of shit on earth when you're having these conversations, knowing full well that you're trying to paint a picture of the past and lie and go against what they know to be true and just paint it a different way. It is sickening.
This sounds a lot like what the mindset that Tyler's going to get in when he has his crisis of confidence not long after this, where Tyler, clearly incredibly talented Big Brother player, but also someone who feels a lot of guilt over that. He would much rather be good at other things that don't have the same kind of lying and everything else involved in them. Did I guess the two of you never would have had a chance to explicitly discuss that, but did you feel a kind of knowing sympathy for what he was going through when it sounds like you were going through the same thing yourself?
Well, I didn't know at the time. So I guess I will say week four, post Wall Yeller, Kevin and I forged the, you know, and this is sort of like the, everyone's just making random Final Two deals. Kevin and I forged the light ring, as I called it. Tyler and I forged the insurance policy, which I think is probably one of the best names as far as Alliance goes in Big Brother history. The insurance policy is forged, which fine. I did not know that's what he was going through at the time. But I mean, in jury house, when these sorts of discussions were had, I'm just like, yeah, I mean, I felt exactly the same way. I guess I will also state, on the Wednesday night prior to the eviction, I had this like ghastly nightmare involving banner planes basically just swarming a Big Brother house and saying rather unsavory things. So I was already in a I was in a mood where I was like, this is not worth it. Case was going. We have our heartfelt moments. You know, I'm in full Jun Seok mode, destroyed by the prodigies going off in my mind. And, you know, now I realize that is just not going to happen. Those Cody and Nicole are locked safe, presumably. And I'm looking at Bailey, and it is, in my mind, it is either me or maybe you or Davon, but probably you. And it is just that is gross.
How do the secret powers start affecting things at this point?
So Saturday morning, or sorry, Saturday, Friday morning rolls around, in which we are introduced to the BB basement twist. And it was quite early. We were not looking up really early that day. And I see this come on the screen, and my initial reaction, because in my mind, I did not sleep that night. I will go ahead and say I did not sleep that night at all. My initial reaction is, this is not good for me in any way, because for me, I know that the biggest problem that I am going to have in this game is that I am going to struggle to get information that is accurate or true. I know that for sure. So the part of the game that I feel like my strength lie is that I'm going to be able to figure out at least a 2 or 3 ply sort of analysis of, if this, then this. If this happens, this is how I'm going to approach it. This is what I'm going to do to make sure that this is going to result in me being safe. I'm also playing where I don't know what these twists are, and they vary from what I had read to a chip redraw, which is damn near useless in past seasons too. Like one where you could, you know, in Big Brother 20, change the nominations before the nomination ceremony. You don't know what they're going to be, but when the HOH turns the key, your nominations come up and the HOH has no idea why. And it just looks like they're nominating. But yes, that was a thing in Big Brother 20. It was called identity theft. I did my homework. I said, that is absurd how overpowered that is. Like, I looked, and Bailey had it, and I asked her. I was like, so let me get this straight. You would go into the diary room before nominations and say, I'd like to use this power, and my nominations are this. And the HOH will put keys in the box and then turn the keys, and your nominations will come up and not theirs. And they will be none the wiser as to why this is occurring. And she said, yes. I'm sitting there and I'm like, I'm incredulous. Apparently Ovi had one in the year prior that was basically what David got, but double. It would be both nominees safe. So I like the variation in strength of these powers is one thing. Two, you have no idea whether they are offensive or defensive, right? So you know, one of them was basically if at any veto ceremony you want, like in the previous season, for a handful of rounds, something like you can stand up and say, this veto is now diamond. The veto winner gets to pick the replacement. Like, that is to me just like so like fundamentally outside of the scope of what Big Brother is, and where I actually shine at games is looking at rule sets and saying, this is the key underlying theme here. And if I'm now playing a game where I don't even know what is out there, and I don't know what effectively the rules are, right, then I'm going to be in a bad spot. Like, the, you know, safety suite was good for me because the information's perfect, right? Like, everyone knows exactly what it does. Everyone knows exactly how it works. And this, literally, everything is in the dark.
Even going back to the old school era, the Arnold Shapiro era of Big Brother, you had the coup d'etat, you had some of these really game-warping twists. What do you think is the categorical difference, if there is one? Is it just that there are so many of those now that they are the rule rather than the exception? Or is it that there's some kind of philosophical change with how the show is being handled? What do you think is the difference there?
Yeah, I think that the sheer number of these being doled out is what that is. I mean, if you really think about it, in pretty much the entirety of the Shapiro era, I believe that the coup d'etat was the only imperfect information, right? Information asymmetry power that was ever doled out, right? Power of veto is added, you know, it's brought up at the, you know, it's brought up in week one, right? And it's, you know, the strategies are sort of built around that, I believe, after the nominations in week one. So it's not ideal, but you know, that is basically the big change, right? Is the introduction of the veto. And then I would say the coup d'etat is the only one where it's like, there is some power out there floating around. You do not know what it is. That being said, you know, that was literally once. What was that?
I think it's just some like autoplay thing on Facebook. Don't worry about it.
All right. But yeah, I mean, it was literally one time in, you know, six seasons, right, where that occurs. And even then, it is one thing, right? It is once. Now, it is extremely powerful, and then it ends up just not even being used. You know, obviously, there's some leverage with it, but, you know, it ends up being unused anyway.
So I think we definitely have seen on Big Brother a huge increase in the number of random powers that come out of nowhere and are impossible to anticipate or do anything about. And we've absolutely seen the same thing on Survivor as well. I mean, I've called it the advantage of the week era, I feel like, is what we are in. Right. There's some new thing is getting thrown in all the time. And this is definitely skipping ahead a bit, but I think it ties in to this same conversation and potentially ties into the conversation about Big Brother just not even really being fundamentally the same game that we grew up watching and honestly spent the early years of this podcast talking about. Well, I mean, the question is, given that this is the year 2020, how unlucky do you think you got to go out in a situation where it took a couple of things falling exactly wrong for you? Is that a huge fluke, or is that something that in the year 2020 is in play a lot more often these days?
So yeah, it's in play a lot more often, right? And certainly that sequence is in play, but for that sequence to happen, like, a lot has to go wrong, right? Like, this is not like someone wins HOH and someone then wins veto, right? It's like, this person wins HOH. This is the exact nomination set. This person pulls themselves down. This person gets put up. This person wins veto, who is not nominated, and pulls down one. Like, it's a lot, right? I mean, maybe the game has passed me by, and I should be on guard to defend any nomination set at any time. But, like, this one, I mean, you got to kind of, like, I don't know. To me, this is a pretty... this is a pretty clear twist out, unlucky-ish sequence. I mean, I've heard as much as, you know, when talking about different players over the years, oh, it's really unlucky that this person won veto. You know, like, I've heard that, right? You know, like that get thrown around in serious analytical discussion, right? And you know, this is recent years. You know, this is like, you know, post-19, right? I had heard, you know, so much as like, oh, Tyler, when he was put up by the hacker twist, which was just fundamentally just completely busted, right? When he gets put up by the hacker twist, that is apparently an extremely bad beat, right? So, I mean, I would say it's on the scale of that. If that is a bad beat, then what I had was certainly a bad beat. If someone's simply winning the veto and then another person goes home instead is described as unlucky, then I don't know how anyone could look at what my situation was and then be like, oh, no, you totally deserved it. Bad play. Like,
that doesn't sit right with me. I would totally understand if the answer here is no, of course not. But did you feel some measure of sympathy for Dani, like in her position, having to put up this unprecedented number of people?
No.
Okay. glad to clear that one up.
I definitely don't disagree with what you're saying. I think any situation where you're number four on the pecking list or the pecking order, and it just happened to break perfectly or imperfectly, depending on whose perspective you're taking this from, that is going to be tough to describe as anything other than unlucky. Although, I don't want to make it sound, and I don't think you do either, like that is necessarily a bad thing. Like, I think the game is, in the abstract, a much more interesting one. If there are more ways for things to come undone for the head of household and the majority alliance, Big Brother in like game theory optimal terms is not that difficult. It's a lot more complex than Survivor, but it's still pretty straightforward. Yeah. It is just for me, not just the number of things that are getting thrown in. It's the way that they're getting thrown in seems like it's often carnival games or America gets to decide what happens.
Yeah, I mean, like I had said, right, like when this gets announced, I had a DR session that I am almost certain would not make air because it is not what they were going for, where they said, so how do you think these powers affect your game? And I was like, this is honestly one of the worst things that could happen for my game. I am not going to be able to know how to play defense against this. I'm not great in situations where the rules are literally not perfect information. So this is, unless I get one of them and it also happens to be the most powerful one, this is probably a big net negative for me.
It's like if you're teaching someone backgammon and it's like, how do I get my checkers off the board? Well, you'll find out when you get there. Like, you got to tell me what I'm going for before we figure out what to do here.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, I liken it to like, you know, I'm playing backgammon. You know, just the situation, and we'll get to like takes, you know, like, and we'll get there. But yeah, it's I don't know, the type of game that I like to play, right, where everything is like based on like precision or, you know, if this happens, then this happens, right? You know, like it's just this very traditional games player kind of game, right? That's the sort of stuff that is going to throw me into a tizzy. Right?
One thing, I mean, one thing that made air for sure is your confessional in week six on the wall competition about, I really want this so that I can use this HOH to get rid of these powers, like find out what they are and have them off the board.
Yeah, I mean, and that was something that was a consideration here because, you know, I think about it. It's like I just don't want this unknown quantity out there because I know that like unknown equals bad for me. Like it just is not it is not going to be good for me because, like I said, in a game of Big Brother, the biggest issue for me is going to be information asymmetry. That is going to be the thing that is going to cause me problems more often than not. Can I go with game information being information asymmetric? I can work around that. I mean, I can get enough that I can make a decent enough decision, you know, a lot of the time. But once it starts to bleed into like, what am I even going for? Then it becomes sort of a problem. you know, like I said, the power, right, it's just so nebulous because, like I said, these could be, as far as I know, it could be we're going to redraw the chips for the veto to, you know, coup d'etat.
Right.
Right. I mean, it's just like just as the way I play, like a traditional games player, you know, what do I even do with this?
Yeah, I wondered if just the mere existence of powers, given the way the games had been going, might be good news for you, just in terms of an extra out.
Yeah, if I get one.
Right, right, of course. Bad when you don't get
one. Yeah, I mean, but if I'm going to the DR and they're asking my opinion on it before the comp happens, I'm like, this is very bad unless I get one of them and it happens to be the most powerful.
Right.
I mean, it's just, this is a net negative in just about any situation for me. You know, God forbid, you know, someone else get one that is, you know, I'm trying to queue up as you know, a buffer. Right.
Right. Right. One other thing that happened somewhere around in here that I'm guessing was, I think it was week 5. You end up sitting out of a power of veto competition. What was going on with that?
Yeah. So long story short. So the nomination set happens on Friday evening, as it tends to do, and nothing occurs twist wise, right? So nothing happens. This is basically what I anticipated and what I needed to happen here. And as I said earlier in the podcast, when those two pictures came up, my first thought is I'm better at this game than I thought, because the cleanup work that had to go into, at least in my perspective, not getting nominated, even as an initial nom, was a lot, right? And then the second thought that I had when I see those nominations is I am very much embarrassed to be taking part in this game. I feel like I have some sort of fingerprints on this optically horrible nomination set. Let's just be very honest with ourselves here. You know, just basically everything that had happened in the, you know, the preceding, I don't know, 10 days since the Wall Yeller was basically just like I did not sleep Thursday night. Thursday night or Friday night. So Friday night, I go probably around 3 or 4 in the morning. I'm having very sharp chest pains and just heart is pounding, right? Like I feel like I'm on the verge of having a, you know, when you have a panic attack, it feels like you're about to die, right? So I make the call at 3 or 4 a.m. where I'm just like, I'm going to the DR and I am seeing the medic right now because something is not right here. So I go see the medic. Long story short, it's like Survivor. If you call for the medic, right, it's not in your hands anymore.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So thank you for clearing that up. What stands out to you, I suppose, from week 5 after that veto box closes? It seems like there are no more twists left to be implemented this week, and you've made it through yet again. Still probably not thrilled about your position, but as Bailey is on the way out here, how are you feeling, and what's going on with all of that?
I mean, I think for me, you know, my process of thought in week 5 really is like, you know, do I have any level of trust with Nicole, right? Because I'm heavily leaning on her to keep me off the block in these sorts of situations, right? And you know, I you know, more or less, you know, I'm in a spot where you know, I would say I trust her basically none, although I kind of have to, given the Christmas is HOH, I trust her pretty much none. Then the nomination ceremony itself happens. I'm back to about like 25%. Then I would say we have like the veto, the box closes, it's not used, the noms are locked in, Davon and Bailey are on the block. I'm back to probably about like 50%. then we have like this halfway party. We had a good time. Everything seemed to be going smoothly. I would probably put it about like 70% there. And then now this is where it gets interesting. So the Wednesday prior to Bailey's eviction is when that conversation happens in the key room, in which there's the comments made, right? Obviously, at this point, my mindset going into HOH6 is I want to win this. Wednesday morning, Nicole and Danny are crying. I'm being called into the heart room, the key room. They're apologizing profusely for what I don't really understand. I have no idea what's going on. They kind of clue me into it. We didn't know exactly. I mean, let me go ahead and preface. It's against the rules to do that as of this year, right? Like prior to the season, we were given very, very clear rules about what you could and could not do in terms of race, ableism, homophobia, anything, right? Like that line, right? This, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It was a pretty clear rule break, right? So they were, I have to imagine, called into the diary room and given a formal warning. I don't know what the process is exactly, but I have to imagine they were given a formal warning, right? And they're crying to me, they're apologizing, I love you, blah blah blah. We kind of have some guess as to what it might be. This is on Thursday morning, and this is the third of three things, pieces of information, and one of the ones that kind of came in an unnatural way that I just wish I never heard. Because I will say, when that conversation happened, I really lowered my guard to these two, and got to a point where I'm now thinking this HOH6 is maybe a little less efficient than I might otherwise think it would be. I don't think I'm getting nominated now. If either of these two gets it, I'm pretty sure I'm lock safe, and I'm back to full trust in my mind with Nicole. So this obviously is, this is sort of where things kind of go haywire, because I end up just being up on that wall and I'm thinking, I can get down from this. It's not going to be my, it's not my hit. It's not my hit to take. There's value in seeing the next HOH. And if I get down when slop is still being doled out, then I can play it off as accidental, because why would I hop down and put myself on slop? I'd wait to eat, right? So, I hop off of there. That to me is a little bit, that's a misplay. That's an error.
I was wondering why you were leaning so far forward.
Yeah, I was like, I am not going up. I was like, I am back in good graces with Nicole and presumably Danny as well. I'm now thinking this isn't really that efficient for me. I'm willing to just roll the dice here. Big mistake. Obviously, with what happened, just the sequence that it happened, that's just sort of where things went.
Do you feel like it was an avoidable mistake, I guess, is what my question is, because it takes the disruptor power and the veto falling into the wrong hands for you to go up. But at the same time, obviously you knew about the veto, and you also did know that three powers just got unleashed, yeah, and you didn't have them.
Yeah, so I think the way that I think about this with the powers is, if you know what the twist is, then play against it, right? But I don't want to I don't want to play against those too much because I feel like, you know, the saying I think from 14 is like, if you are playing against that clear question mark box that's in the vending machine, right, then, you know, that's what LaJuan does, right?
Right.
So it's like you try to just play big brother is sort of my take on that. Again, I also don't know what these powers are, and I don't know who has them, right? Like, if David's power is like an offense power rather than a defense power, then I'm not gonna, like, you could tell me David has one. Well, if I'm worried if it's defensive, but if it's offensive, I think it's not gonna be my hit to take. So, you know, it's very difficult to play against things you don't know, and it just seems to me like almost overly cautious if I want to stick up there.
Did your conversations with Nicole become noticeably different this week?
In week six?
Yeah.
Yeah, because to me it seemed like full trust had been established compared to much of week five.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then...
Yeah, it seemed to me like that was the case.
And then was there a transition from that once you were up on the block and she knew you were going to go?
I would say there were a couple things. One moment was like, she's like, if you don't have the votes to go, would you be mad? And I, like, immediately I even said it was on feed. I was like, oh, so I don't even have your vote now. You know, kind of like that, you know, Ian Mike conversation where I say like, oh, it's a tough choice. And he's like, what? You know?
Yeah. Right.
It's almost identical to that where it's like, ooh, I don't think you know, this is not a good spot here.
Right. That's a perfect, you know, parallel. Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, you know, I'm wearing a suit that night for a reason. Right. You know, I know I'm going, I'll, you know, barring a miracle here. So, yeah. You know, I mean, like, you know, I'm, you know, I put two and two together on it, but, you know, I think one thing that a lot of people are saying, you know, that I think where I'm getting a lot of criticism, rather unfairly for being a bad player is they say, oh, well, you know, you got nominated and, yeah, he's out and his campaign wasn't so swift. Let's be honest with ourselves. The second that my ass hits that nomination chair, the amount of equity that I am playing with at that point is like, what, sub $2,500? I mean, I'm basically throwing shit at a wall and seeing what sticks and just doing and saying anything I can to try to shift things around.
So, and I feel weird hammering on this from so many different angles, but after that week, and we'll certainly talk through it in more detail, but the Nicole of it all, having reestablished that trust,
yeah,
then on your way and being in the jury house for the next however many weeks, were you feeling positively about Nicole going forward?
I mean, as far as whether I would vote for her to win or her chances.
How about both? Yeah, I would okay. Be interested in
so,
both.
So, I mean, for me, my mindset was, I think this girl's just cutting her own legs off. I mean, like, this was not a good play. I mean, her and Danny, to be honest, for at first, right? When it was just me there for a week alone, I was like, man, I think that was a big mistake. I thought that was just an atrocious decision by the two of them. I pieced it together. Like, I was sort of like in a shell shock state, not really thinking about it while I was on stage with Julie or, you know, when I was in, you know, the post-eviction pre-jury house location, eating dinner, you know. For me, it was when I was at that, you know, intermediate location and laying in bed where I started to just sit like, yeah, the five votes were these, the three votes were these, didn't have Nicole's vote. If she believes that it is a good game move, then I don't begrudge her for that. We're all trying to win, right? But at the same time, do I think it was a good game move? No. Do I think it was a good game move for Danny? Absolutely not. So for me, I was basically like, I don't think this was a good play. That week where I'm by myself, my brain is at Tyler and Cody are running this game. That's where my mind is at during that week by myself. That being said, Davon gets there to the jury house and she seems to believe that Danny is the one running things and, you know, explains a few things to me. And at that point, I'm just like, oh shit, Danny must be playing good. I just didn't see it. I wasn't there this week that she had. Danny must be playing real strong. Obviously the triple happens. She ends up coming in. And you know, just based on everything that she explained to me about the week I went out, it was in the back of my mind. It seems like Memphis Cody strong armed her, basically, you know, and it became very clear to me who the two top players were, and Cody and Memphis respectively. With as far as my jury vote went, I'm not against voting for Nicole. However, I'm throughout the whole process, I don't think she's playing a particularly good game. She's not won anything. She had by far the best table draw going in. I felt like she didn't really establish any relationship other than Christmas in-house. I felt like she relied on a lot that was forged outside the house. I didn't think she was playing that strong. She wins the she sweeps the week at final six to send Memphis out. You know, some brownie points there. But really, for me, in my mind, going into that final four, final three, whoever delivers Cody's head on a silver platter is probably who's going to get my vote.
So I've been out of the loop on exit interviews other than I heard from Cody, but with jurors, you're the first opinion I've gotten to hear from in terms of like who would have beaten whom in hypothetical situations.
Okay, so, yeah. So, I mean, it seems to me, let's just look at the final four.
Well, first of all, would you have voted for if Nicole wins final head of house? I don't even remember if she was part of part three, but
she was part of part three.
If she had won final HOH and taken Enzo, would she have been live for your vote?
Yes, correct. Because she's the one who eliminates Cody, who was playing the best.
Okay.
Right. So yeah, she's absolutely live for my vote. Yeah. Here's the thing. I want to say this about jury voting or whatever. Okay. In Big Brother 14, if I get like callously cut by Dan and I'm like a broke 21-year-old that has like, you know, $200 in my bank account and I'm, you know, set up to make a nice payday and then it just gets like coldly cut. Yeah, I'm going to be pissed and bitter, right? 29-year-old Ian, who, you know, I'm playing backgammon, you know, a considerable amount against friends. You know, there's some money involved. You know, when I lose, we're still friends at the end of the night. I can take that into you know, consideration. I, you know, I'm not super pressed for the money here. So, you know, I don't really mind, you know, that I'm going to be able to vote for someone who, you know, votes me out. I mean, it's not like I didn't benefit from Nicole's existence in the game at other times. Right. So like that to me, we're just trying to win, right? Like that's how I view things. Just different perspective. And, you know, it is any, you know, person in the final two's job to take those sorts of perspectives into account, right? But I find that, for me, I can vote for Nicole. If she clips Cody at final three, then, yeah, she's live for my vote. That being said, when she comes outside to the jury and we're all sitting out there and she says she would have clipped Enzo, Danny and I look at each other like, holy hell. Like this is sort of like when I think about like Big Brother, right? It's sort of like in how we analyze who is good, who's not good. Like these sorts of mistakes, they are, as I said with Cody, he did not make a 0.900 blunder this time around, right? Like that is just lighting 450K on fire. I care about how much equity your decisions, your competition ability, is coughing up, right? Like that's what I'm looking for. I'm looking for your error rate. I'm saying, are you making small mistakes? I don't really care about these little 0.02, 0.03, 0.01s. I do care a lot about, you know, 0.900 blunders, right? And when Nicole comes out and says that is, if she would have won that and taken Cody, that is a mistake because she does lose that final two vote. Cody, if he was in the final two, wins regardless. There was no way for him to bungle the decision. It would have been closer with him taking Nicole, but he still wins 5-4, 6-3, I think. I'm not exactly certain. But, I mean, Cody's getting my vote if he's there in either scenario. If Enzo clips Cody, then I think Enzo actually is drawing live to win that one 5-4. He's not playing part three, though. So, you know, I find it interesting that, like, these sorts of mistakes that are very, very costly are, you know, being held in the same weight as small mistakes that just are like, that why is it evaluated that way? Like, that doesn't make any sense to me just with how I view equity. Making big bad mistakes is a lot worse, you know, than making a couple tiny little inaccuracies, as the chess world would say.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's backtrack a bit. Sorry for going bit.
You went way off there.
A bit off topic there. But before you were a juror, in your final week here in the House, Devon is going to win this power of veto and end up using it to pull Kevin down. And it seems like you were getting some bad vibes about how this may end up going for you. You do ultimately go up here, but you're up next to Tyler, who many do consider a pretty big threat within the game, I would imagine.
Yeah.
And how live were you feeling at the point where went up?
When I went up, I mean, I felt like I had a chance to stay. I didn't think it was much worse than 50-50. I didn't know I was drawing completely stone dead or near stone dead. You know, I felt like, I mean, Tyler is a good player. There is no doubt about that. I mean, as far as my understanding goes and conversations that I had with good Big Brother players that watch Big Brother modern seasons, Tyler was apparently the consensus best player of the more recent years, from what I understand. He was the standout. I asked my mom, you know, who watches, I was like, is this guy good? She's like, yeah, he's really good. He's probably the best player in recent memory. So, you know, I felt like I could definitely push this angle of like, he's a shark, I'm a fish. Why is this guy not going? Unfortunately, for me, you know, I think that when you actually play Big Brother with people that have played before, they tend to recognize why keeping someone like me in is going to be dangerous and why I am actually a good player, regardless of what anyone wants to say. The fact that I'm seen as an issue that has to be taken care of before the end game is very telling, right, about why I would be considered scarier than, say, Nicole F. if we are nominated together. And to me, that's sort of the issue that I, you know, I felt obviously he's in this alliance. You know, I don't know. But once Memphis isn't giving me his vote, and then I feel things like slipping away. You know, for me, I recognized that I was going to have a very hard time using that line, just given what the House, particularly Cody, knew about the Big Brother 14 endgame, where I'm banging off alternate HOHs from 9 onward. Every HOH I play from basically mid-game to the end, I win. You know, I'm going to have problems, given that he did know that I had won HOH 4 times, all backloaded. And that's not even something I can lie about if asked, because you know that someone knows. Like, I always would get a little sick to my stomach when someone would say, how many times did you win HOH? Like when that conversation was had and you know you have to be honest about it because you know someone knows and you have to say four, it's just not a good thing. It just makes your stomach turn a little bit. It's a tough sell. It's a very tough sell to say.
And how much money did you
like,
get
I'm
for
bad.
First place again, Ian? I think the group wants to know how much that first place check was.
Yeah, it's just, it's a tough sell. It's a tough sell, even given what I'm up against. I do know that he's good, and I do think I'm drawing live. And I just said, like, once I realized it was just getting away from me, I'm in full, like, I mean, let's just be real. And I am very aware of the fact that when things do not break my way, I can be a total prick. I am fully aware of that. That being said, as far as the backgammon community goes, my behavior is probably in the upper 50% when I have a bad beat. I mean, there's 70, 60, 80-year-old guys that will throw cups, break clocks when they're getting shitty rolls. Like this is just par for course as far as what I'm exposed to. I said when my equity is 0%, I'll be a good sport. Until further notice, I am going to be a right prick.
Well, it seemed like through your speech on eviction night, you were at least still in there fighting, which is what we love to see. But at what point did it begin to feel to you like this was almost surely not going to go your way?
The moment for me where I really knew things were not going to break my way was like Christmas, and I had a conversation in the HOH room over a game of backgammon where she hinted strongly that I was not going to be getting her vote. And that's where I kind of knew like this is not going to break my way.
Okay, and so those last couple of days, I would imagine, have to be pretty weird and probably stressful and not much fun, but I'm trying to find a way of asking this. As someone who, on your first time, made it the distance, won the game, had one of the better case situations in the grand scheme of things come in, and now is going back for round number two, did it feel like you were almost worse prepared than the average returnee would be for how hard it can be to go through the rougher times in Big Brother?
Yeah, I mean, I definitely I don't really know this this feeling so much. I think for me, the closest I felt was the few hours after the final four veto before. You know, Dan says, you know, hey, I have an idea, but just, you know, keep up what you're doing. I think that those few hours were probably like the worst it felt in 14. Perhaps like, you know, I know Brittany's going home, but I do not have that reference point of like what it is like to lose this game. And out of the 16 people that were on this season, I was the only one who had never lost. Because Nicole obviously lost Big Brother 16 before winning 18. So I did not have any idea of what it is like to hear you have been evicted. Like that is not you know, something I understand or the idea, like the concept of not being there the entire time felt so foreign to me.
Yeah, or just being the guy on the outs for a few days before the eviction, which...
Right.
Is an experience that most people who play Big Brother go through. It's got to be totally foreign to you, which is crazy to think about after 100, however many. What's your total number of days that you ended up playing?
75 and 44. So, yeah.
119? Yeah, okay. Yeah. After that many days in the house, it's got to be wild to suddenly have the absolute worst possible experience thrown your way and have that be the ending note. But it seemed like you were able to handle it well, and Julie was very complimentary of what a classy young gentleman you were.
Yeah, I mean, anyone that sees the feeds, you know, the days prior knows when I am losing, and if I feel that it is in any way like unjust or you know, just random, right? I mean, I'll be the first to admit it. I can be a huge dick. I think it's not on the scale of, you know, some of those, you know, there, you know, there's some poker players, right, that, you know, we always like to watch their bad beat clips because their reactions are just so, you know, just so raw and, you know, fuck this, that, you know, I knew this person was going to do this too, fuck them, you know, it is sort of on that scale. I mean, like I have, you know, had some bad beat in backgammon before I really got to like take the bad beats better, where I like literally like slam a door against a wall so hard that the knob goes through the wall and puts a hole there, right? Like I can get very frustrated when I'm losing. When my equity is 0% in backgammon, I will shake hands. I will say good match, but you know, the equity's got to be zero, you know, like that is, you know, what it comes down to. So yeah, once I'm out, once I hear Ian, you've been evicted, there's nothing I can even do at that point. So, you know, you take your loss, and go and shake hands and say good game and that's it.
I was dying for someone to tell you to get to Steppen on your way out. I really wanted that to happen.
Right. I mean, it would have been pretty amusing. But realistically, what it really comes down to is, it's frustrating.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. But it seemed like as soon as you found out that it wasn't the result of people just blundering all over the place and there was actual, in the moment, strategic thought
some
behind it. that it at least made it easier for you.
Yeah, I would say that. I would say that.
Okay. And I was curious if, like, I don't know what the circumstances would have to be, but if all of the disaster results hadn't come in and you'd made it through this week and you win this next week set of head of household.
That's the real kick in the pills is seeing Hydrant hustle. And you know, I see that in Jury House and I'm like, I am fucking winning that. Cause that is very efficient. I'm winning that. And, Memphis is definitely the target there. Probably with Christmas or Memphis. I'm kind of just whichever of the two.
Okay. So do you have any big regrets from the game that you feel like you're going to have a hard time getting over? Or is this something that's already in the past for you?
I mean, it's in the past. I think the frustration really comes from this. I mean, I feel like the narrative of, you know, my true of what my actual skill is in a game of Big Brother versus the popular perception that gets kind of thrown around, or maybe not popular perception, but the narrative that gets thrown around of, oh, Ian's not good at it. That's absurd to me. I mean, I was getting basically no dice support this time and playing defense in a spot where realistically I should have gone out much, much earlier a lot of the time.
Okay. And as a juror,
that is absurd. I mean, I'm playing defense the entire time.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. It's the most extreme circumstance you can draw up in terms of power imbalance your entire time in the house, essentially. As a juror, first of all, how were the Ponderosa accommodations? I feel compelled to ask because we just, again, rewatched all of Big Brother 8 for one of our patron rewatches, and I thought it was hysterical when the BB8 first juror, Dustin, shows up at Ponderosa and seems genuinely so much happier to be there than be at the house itself. Did you potentially go through a similar experience?
Oh, absolutely not.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I will give it to, you know, it's a nice, it was a very nice accommodation. But I mean, I would t- 10 times over rather be in the house. I mean, there's no doubt about it. There is no place I'd rather be in that moment than inside the soundstage playing BB, possibly in a slightly better position than I remember being there on day like two of being at the jury house where I'm the only person there, other than, the show staff that are in charge of monitoring this. And thinking to myself, like, this is day three, and I am already ready to be like, when do I get the hell out of here?
I've heard that you were, like, trying to jump the fence. How much truth is there to that?
That's not quite true. One of the things I was very fond of doing was I would stand at the fence. There was, like, a little opening where I could kind of, like, look out into the outside world. But there was, I'm not going to. I'm smarter than that, right? But like at the same time, yeah, I mean, I would have rather been just about anywhere but there.
Oh, okay.
I mean, I tried to make a big play going into week five, under this intention where if this just does not break my way, then at least I don't have to go to jury house.
Oh, okay. So another awesome call there by me.
did it seem like, because people were commenting that in that week that you described as being especially tough for you, that it felt like everybody, there's just kind of a mood around the house that was affecting a lot of people in their own ways. Even Cody, who was in as good a position as anyone could really expect to be in Big Brother at that moment, felt like he was just kind of going through a lot. And obviously he's going to get the news about his grandfather and so on, but everyone, it felt like, just seemed like they weren't having fun. They just didn't want to be there. It was a kind of general vibe that was really that brought the mood down.
Yeah, I mean, that week was just absolutely miserable for pretty much everybody. I mean, like, I know for me, I think a large part of the reason why I had such a hard time that week was just, like, It is really, really nasty to see that nomination set occur, right? Like that to me is like this game is disgusting. Like that to me is just like a hard line, where I have little to no desire to take part in this anymore, and frankly, I don't want to. Right. Like, it's just like, I don't want to be there. And I think for everyone, it was like the Janelle Kacer rounds were kind of like a honeymoon period in a way, because there was like this consensus house target. And then now that they're gone and, you know, now it's Bailey and Dave on that are facing the heat. It's just like, it just does not feel, it does not feel good. Like I said, in-house, like Kacer, in a weird way, it kind of helped keep things, the house together, because people were generally, you know, it was just an easy target, right? Like, I mean, not for me, but for, you know, most of the folks in there, just a consensus pick. And with that just not being present, it just makes it really feel, it's just a lot different of a vibe.
Yeah, I think that's totally understandable. And I was actually wondering, and sorry if this is a weird thing to ask, and I know you already talked about how if you got the call and it was a legit opportunity to go back, you would have a really hard time saying no in the first place. But given how all of this has played out, and to 100% be results oriented here, do you, or does any part of you at least, regret having gone back?
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
And will like you be signing up to audition for BB23?
What's that?
Are you going to be auditioning for BB23? I ask because one of the I don't even know if you know that this.
The shaking head.
Yeah, shaking your head was so was, funny.
I thought that was, when that happened, I thought that was just like the funniest thing I could do. I mean, just the thing is, I personally, I do not enjoy. There's a couple things I learned. One, I can get through the early game without hand-holding and Mike Boogie granting me safety, right? I proved that I am not going to go in there and be the first boot or second boot every time. I can make relationships with key people to keep me in the game. So that's one thing I was happy about. Second thing is, like I said, if you are someone who gets that call as a winner, I just like you, I feel like it is just a situation, especially if you're one that has only played once and are 1-0, I feel like you just kind of have to. It's just, I don't know. Sportsmanship wise, it just, to me, I don't know. Doesn't sit well with me to turn it down.
Is this a Derek subtweet right now?
No.
Okay. I'm just kidding. Maybe.
He has his reasons, right? But like, it's just like, I don't see how I could say no. I mean, that to me is just it would just seem like chicken almost.
Let me ask it in this way then, because one trend that we've noticed and commented on a lot in the Survivor context is people who were massive fans of the show before going on, they go on, they do very well for themselves, they have a great kind of reception by the fans, and then they take the obvious opportunity to go back because, hey, why wouldn't you? It went so well for me the first time, and maybe I have some unfinished business that I need to take care of. And regardless of how well that second chance goes to them, it feels like a lot of them, nonetheless, come away very disillusioned with the show. Like, a lot of them just don't, maybe they still watch, but they're not avid fans the way they were before they got that peek behind the curtain. It sounds like for you that kind of disillusionment had already set in long before this time. But did you think that there was a chance that you would end up kind of regretting it or being soured on the whole concept in the same way?
No. I mean, because for me, like I said, like you pointed out, I was already disillusioned a bit, right? Like I was already kind of like, not so hot on this. I don't know. Like, I think for me, I think 17 was kind of a turning point. I think especially I know I had talked with Koss kind of going into Big Brother 17, where it was, as far as the takeover twist was advertised, it basically seemed like it was going to be a weekly twist, right? And for Koss and I, the way that I think me, you, him, Paul, think about this game, the idea of some sort of weekly, like the weekly random power, right, is just, it just hampers the long-term strategic thinking that I find so interesting about the game. I don't really, for me, when I'm thinking about this game, I don't find social play to be that interesting. What I find interesting is, when the six-finger plan is developed, where you see how you can use this rule set and just break it to your advantage. Like, I watch The Genius. The ones that I like are whenever someone figures out the game, right? Those are the moments where I'm really interested, is when someone breaks open pass, or what's another good example? The mining game, right? Like, those are when I'm like, oh, that's so interesting. Or God's judgment. Those are the things that I find interesting. Coming up with these strategic ideas to break the game in your favor. The social play is not something that I find. That's not why I tune in, right? And for me, the weekly power, right? It just sort of takes away from long-term, there's a chessboard in the house for a reason, so that's sort of the way I see it. Is just I like the idea of long-term planning, playing a part in these games. And I think that's sort of where I started to kind of, once 17 was advertised as having basically a weekly twist, I think for me it took a hit there. And and I think with Survivor, just like the inundation of vote cancelers and idols and whatever, it just becomes a little less interesting to me.
So I know you haven't watched your whole season back, but based on...
And I likely won't, right?
Yeah, right. Based on what you have heard, I guess, and what you saw firsthand in the house yourself, obviously, where does Cody stack up for you among all-time great Big Brother winning games?
I mean, I think this particular winning game is quite strong. I mean, it's going to be up there in probably the top four or five. That being said, I mean, he never faced any shred of like adversity in terms of like a comp going the wrong way at any point. So, I mean, kudos to him. I mean, he was in the good alliance and he was at the core of it. And he played, you know, he played the double six as well, right? But good on him. Strong play. I mean, if you're not facing the heat, then I guess that's just means you've done well.
Yeah, having three people shove all in and looking down at pocket aces is always a good plan. From what I have heard from the people who are watching it very closely, it sounds like Cody did a pretty impeccable job.
He did a very, very good job. I mean, I will say one of the things that was pointed out on 2+2 that I had read is, you know, someone goes, well, he did play a strong game, but in the final five, if Christmas doesn't drop her pumpkin, he's in some deep, deep crap. And, that is true. I mean, she's one pumpkin away from winning HOH. I have to imagine it's a Cody Nicole non-set. Nicole wins veto, and that is gonna be the end of it.
Wow. I mean, a lot of sliding doors moments here, and in many Big Brother seasons. So, but
you know, Davon gets the question right in week five. And what happens?
Kaser pushes his beer to the right place.
Yeah. Exactly.
Or Kaser rolls the ball to the top faster.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the thing is like those rounds. I mean, those games, week three and four, anyone could have won those. I mean, that is an open field as far as I'm concerned. Right. It is not like it's some game where the fact you have an alliance of people that are beasts is going to play favorably for you. I do think that. You know, one of the things that we say a lot with Big Brother is we talk about like the competitions and how luck plays into that. I mean, having a strong alliance, right, like lends itself to having better outcomes. You're set up better in those situations. So that is obviously part of it. And being a skillful competition player is going to lead to good situations more often than not. So that's to his credit. But that being said, those pivotal rounds, week three and four, that's beer slide and ball roll. I mean, that could go any which way.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So a lot went on while you were gone, obviously in the real world as well. What were the biggest surprises to you to find out once you got out of the house?
You know, there really weren't actually a huge number of surprises because when I was in the jury house, I managed to find a telescope and like an old, you know, refracting style one. And I found a house not that far off that would just basically all you could see in the window was CNN. So I would just spend some nights training that thing on that shot. I could read the comments. Like I knew about Trump got COVID. I knew RBG had passed. I knew about the replacement SCOTUS nom. These are the sorts of things. I knew about like this, like, what was it? Some sort of like weird, like governor kidnapping plot.
Yes.
Like,
yeah.
Like,
oh man.
Like I knew about this stuff. The day that telescope was taken away once it was cottoned on to what I was doing was a sad day.
It's crazy that a governor getting at least an attempted kidnapping on a governor that happened a month or two ago at this point. I've got a loose sense of time these days, but that in any year prior to like 2016 would have been one of the craziest stories of the year, and it's like already forgotten about.
Yeah, right. I mean, I remember seeing that and just thinking like, what the hell? Like, huh? Like I had to sit there and be like, am I reading this right? Like it's not always super easy to read some of the chyrons. But, like, that one I had to really make sure I read things right.
Do you think there might be some like Truman Show style setup going on where like this was engineered so that you would think that the world was a certain way, like this is all some big plot by production or something?
I don't know. Maybe.
That's, hang on. Guys, all right, before I say this, copyright Colin Stone, year 2020, this is my idea. If anyone makes this, I get executive producer credit, created by credit, Dom gets nothing. This is the show. You sequester people ostensibly for a Big Brother type game show where once you're eliminated, there's some secondary sequester for an alleged jury thing, but you set them up where they think they've like beaten the system and found a way to sneak outside news, and you're fake. Feeding them fake news about this world that you're creating, and you see how people react to literal fake news. That's my show.
That is actually a pretty good idea. It's
I'm editing this out. That's too good to say in the podcast.
I always love the prank, these prank variations, the Joe Schmo show. I had never watched, but I heard of the concept of some British space cadets program where they get dumbass people that think that they're going into space, like just really, really stupid. And they're just put into a little fake rocket ship on a soundstage, basically. And they're told that they're in outer space, and they specifically picked people that like, oh, it's been fitted with like anti-gravity. It has artificial gravity put into it, so you won't float around. And they think they're in space.
Dom, are you going to go on that show?
Oh, I'm in. Let's do it.
Yeah. All right. Well, Ian, I am guessing it will at least be a little while before we see you back on our Big Brother screens, if ever. Would you, though, be open to doing other sorts of TV game shows or other kinds of endeavors, or are you good to hang out and go back to your normal life?
For me, like I'm interested in trivia style game shows, more traditional game shows, things like that. I mean, I've been in consideration for at least one in the past, so that's something I'm not opposed to. As far as Big Brother goes, I really don't enjoy it, I guess. So that's probably a no for me. But yeah, that's sort of my thoughts on everything.
Do you feel like BB22 or any kind of all-star season in the modern era was doomed to disappoint for those of us who grew up loving the classic seasons just by virtue of taking place this late into the run and all of the wacky twists and dumping slime on people and pandering to middle schoolers and so forth that are invariably going to come with that? Or do you feel like under different circumstances and if competitions fall differently, a modern all-star season could really be a home run?
I feel like it could have been a home run. I feel like the potential was there. I do feel like, a couple things fell through as far as the cast went, that likely made a difference. Obviously if the competitions go a little bit differently, maybe a few more shifts. I think that the potential for it to be a really interesting season was there.
When you are, you're 29 right now. So when you're 44, 15 years from now, thinking back on your time collectively in the Big Brother house between both of your two seasons, other than the financial aspect of it, are you going to feel like Big Brother has like taught you things about life, or what are you going to remember about your time in the BB house?
I mean, I think for me, it's an interesting game, on the surface. In 14, it really was, this really awesome novelty thing to be able to go on there as someone who grew up watching this show and as a huge fan, right, to go on there and play and then go on to win. I mean, really, there's no feeling like that, right? Obviously this time I was a bit jaded to say the least, with the show just going into it. And I think this time it's just, okay, well, you know, this is, you know, at least now I know what it feels like to be on the opposite side of it.
I do wonder sometimes, and I'm curious what your own personal view is on this, but with the winners who have played multiple times, either they won and then they came back again and didn't win, or they didn't win their first season and then won their on their return appearance, I often wonder, like, how their life would have turned out had if you flip those things around. So if Cody just chooses to take Victoria back in, you know, 6 years ago now, and then maybe get second this season instead somehow, or if you had been a popular first juror in BB14 and then you get invited back for this season, you go on and win it. Like, do you think, how do you think your life changes, and would you have been in a better place, you think, to live with that win now as opposed to 8 years ago?
No, I think that the win, I felt like that was a good time to win that for me. I feel like just in terms of where I was in life, I felt like it came at the right time.
It's interesting because in general,
I prefer this order.
Yeah, I too would have preferred having $500,000 at age 21. In general, though, I would say, as someone who has watched a lot of reality TV and seen money do very good things for some people and do very bad things, frankly, for other people, I would definitely have said that it would, in the dark, be better for the average person, and I think this is definitely the case for me as well, to have that kind of windfall later rather than when they're in their early 20s.
Right.
I think
right.
You are the extreme exception to that, and we talk about this a lot because there are frankly a lot of winners who were 21, 22, 23 across a bunch of shows who went totally off the deep end, and you and Sophie Clark are the two that we always cite as like the counter examples. And I totally agree that in your, for you specifically, Ian Terry, winning at age 21, I'm sure set you up for a much better future than if you had had to wait 8 more years
for that. For sure.
But it is wild just what an exception you are in that respect, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I've always taken, quite a bit of pride in that I was so young and did not blow through the money.
It's truly super rare.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. So, what's next for you? What do you want to do from here?
I mean, for me, and again, this actually kind of goes into why I sort of even made the decision to go. Right. I mean, once I got the call, I don't think there was much question, but I mean, for me, you know, I backgammon is my game of choice, considerably more than Big Brother. Where I was at prior to COVID, as far as that was going, essentially the way that they dole out mastership titles and grandmaster titles, you go to live tournaments. You say, I'm submitting my matches from this tournament beforehand. You record your matches. You put it into a software solver, essentially, and it tells you how well you played. Going to, I guess it would be a year ago now, a tournament that I went to in Fort Lauderdale, where I was playing just missing a mastership title, like just really not just right outside of that range, and then playing in the last tournament pre-COVID in San Antonio in February, where I was playing like very comfortably inside that range in which I could earn a mastership title. I have to, those numbers go against old numbers when I was a filthy, filthy intermediate. But, as far as working that average down to earn that mastership title, I feel like that is sort of something that is at the forefront for me. Because it's just, I know that, let me put it this way. I know that in a non-COVID world in which tournaments are actively going on and I'm going, I'm going to the one in April that I was going to go to. I'm going to the one in May that I was supposed to go to. Going to the one in June that I was supposed to go to. I know that that's something that I already have under my belt. It's just a matter of, we need to get past, you know, the post-COVID world and tournaments are happening again, and I can actually just get out there and earn it.
As I've said for a long, long time, since back when you were a filthy intermediate, back when I could still beat you, I feel like if you apply yourself, you absolutely have it in you to become a literally world-class backgammon player. I mean, I've been to backgammon tournaments, and you have a 30, 40, 50-year-ish head start on a lot of the guys at the top of the game, on the and the women at the top of the game, by the way, as well. So I'm very much rooting for you there and have the utmost faith in you to knock that and whatever else you decide you end up wanting to pursue absolutely out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just really telling. I mean, like, you know, on you know, we'll say grid gammon, right? You know, I'm typically averaging about an 1800 rating. I would say 1900 up is world class. And like what I would say is really, really world-class players. And I mean, I'm just like, 1800 is still like, as far as the bell curve goes, very strong. That is probably like, if you're averaging 1800 on grid, which makes sense given how they dole out the mastership titles, that is probably about your equivalent to about a 2100, 2150 chess rating. So I mean, that's sort of, if you have any familiarity with that, then that's sort of where I'm at with backgammon.
Okay, so absolutely
2200.
Yeah, looking forward to seeing what becomes of all of that. What else do you have that you're hoping to pursue in terms of, I know you're a guy with a lot of different interests, and I'm guessing you've got some irons in the fire. Where should people be on the lookout for you anywhere in particular?
So right now I'm talking with a backgammon grandmaster. There is looking to be some collaboration on a book for beginner players. So that's kind of in the works right now. As far as work goes, I mean, I'm sort of at a point where I'm kind of, you know, consulting. I'm sort of just seeing how that's going. It's just different in the COVID world. So, you know, I'm sort of thinking moving more towards like a quantitative field, perhaps. You know, I know full well that as far as like GMAT goes, GRE goes, that if I spend really any time studying for that, then it's just going to be an extremely strong result. So I, you know, like I know just from discussions, obviously my girlfriend's a lawyer who went to, you know, she went to Yale, and you know, we've had the discussion that, you know, I probably could get into an MBA at top Ivy. So that's a possibility.
Not bad. One thing that I would absolutely be remiss to let you out of here without asking, I would love to hear, now that you've had a little time to see what people have been saying online, potentially listen to some podcasts here and there, what are some of the takes that along the way stood out to you as like wildly inaccurate or unfair?
I mean, I think that, use, like I said, the using the you know, what, 4 days post nomination to somehow come to the conclusion that this is a bad Big Brother player, I just feel like that is just comically unfair. I mean, again, my equity at that point is I have such little to lose that I mean, like any mistake I'm making is so small compared to other ones that were on the table to be made by players that are considered good, including in the past. You know, I mean, like Nicole is going to take Cody to the end and burn 450K. I mean, like that's telling, you know, and you know, all the mistakes that I'm making are relatively small. Additionally, I felt like the idea that me complaining that I'm being twisted out is you know, look, I love Brent Wolgamott. I think he's a great commentator. He's a really funny guy. But I mean, he had this tweet where it's like he is not getting twisted out. There are plenty of other options to be put up. Like that to me is doesn't make sense. Realistically, if two people are nominated at the nomination ceremony on Friday afternoon, one of them has to be there on the block on Thursday night's eviction ceremony, barring a twist. So it doesn't matter. There could be 50 other options. That is in fact a twist out. I don't see like that is objectively that is just an objectively true thing. I don't quite understand where he's going with on that. Also, I feel like the criticism that all Ian is doing is hiding behind Nicole or whatever. Well, yeah, that might be because her allies are in HOH every single week, and I have to use that relationship heavily to progress. And my MO is to link up with someone like that is going to be a social player and do a lot of the social legwork for me, because I know that is the aspect of the game that I'm not particularly strong in. And that relationship is keeping me off of the block in a lot of rounds in these early goings. And that is just because I realize this is someone to link up with. And that is a smart choice. Saying that, oh, you didn't work with Janelle and Kaser, this is what you get for working with, Snake Nicole. Well, okay, but there is no working with Janelle and Kaser. That is just something that has come up, and I find it to just be very unfair, because I said in the jury house, like, Kaser and I don't know if it made error, but as Janelle is leaving in week three, 30 minutes before that live episode takes place, Kaser and I formally shake hands and lock in a long-term, you are who I want to roll with in this game. Don't ever forget that. Me and you to the end. And I really wanted to work with Kaser. It's just there was no working with Kaser. Enzo wins HOH, and at that point, my mind is at it is either me or him, period. And it's I'm going to do what I can to make sure it is not me.
Yeah. Dom, anything else that you had that we were not able to squeeze into the last 6+ hours?
I guess the one question I would have is, I just going back to you shaking your head behind Julie as she's saying where you can apply. What, I guess, even if you would say categorically, like, don't apply, if someone was determined, they want to live their dream, they want to get on Big Brother, what are the things that you think they need to know coming in, just so they know what they're getting themselves into and can, mentally steel themselves for it before they start?
I would just straight up say that game is nasty. It looks fun on TV, and I think this is something I'll say. People say like, oh, I like the, I like to play the social strategy game. They're so fun. It becomes markedly less fun when you're not in the comfort of your own home and there is a very large, life-changing, for some folks, cash prize on the table. It becomes really, really, really high pressure and really unpleasant very fast. So just brace yourself. It might look fun as people are getting slimed on TV and you're running around in a star costume or a spacesuit or a cereal box. It might look like a good old time, but it can be quite, quite nasty.
It does not look fun to me, so I'm glad that I'm
okay.
I'm already on the side that I should be on there. But Ian, I am glad that you have gotten as much as it sounds like you have out of your time on the show in general. And furthermore, well, it certainly didn't go as well as it could have this time around. And I don't think there was a whole lot that could have been done on your end to really.
One thing I want to say, I do not want to say like, oh, I didn't do anything wrong, and this is just not my fault, and there's nothing I could have done. If you, and I said it in one of the jury statements, I don't know if it made error. If you lose a Big Brother, you made a mistake. You might not have had things as easy as other people, but there is Like, it just, no one has played this game at a 0.0 PR. No one.
Right.
No
if you one win, has Big that. Brother, you have made mistakes along the way, for sure.
Yes. Yes. And it's just, you know, like, you know, if you lose, you made some active errors, right? So I acknowledge I made mistakes, but there was no like catastrophic blunder. You know, there were mistakes made for sure, but there was never any like, you know, game ending disaster blunder here. I mean, you know, I felt like I just kind of played fine and my number just came up a little earlier than it like mathematically should have.
No, I think if you asked me, out of everyone you've seen on reality TV, if someone were to go back on a return appearance and completely punt, who would be the most likely to put their hand up and say, yeah, I absolutely gave that one away? I would probably say Ian Terry. I think one of the, as I said before, however many hours ago, one of the things that really appealed to me the first time we ever had you on this podcast was your willingness to really own up to mistakes and be self-reflective. And I totally buy that if you felt like there were spots worthy of that kind of criticism, you would be very eager to own up to them right away. And with that in mind, I totally take your interpretation of this at its word. And thank you very much for spending all of these hours here with us today. And furthermore, I don't know if I'm gonna continue being grateful for having gotten into back into Big Brother, but at least for the time being, I will say, I thought the days of caring about Big Brother were so far behind me, and even though this season was not one that I ended up sticking with for the entirety, and there were plenty of parts along the way, even while I was watching, that I did not totally love the same way I used to back in the day. On the whole, having this opportunity to come in here and talk some Big Brother with Dom and some other folks and really get that love of the game back in, however fleetingly it may have been there, was a ton of fun, and it was entirely because of you. I don't think there's any scenario where we would have gotten this heavily into the season if you weren't on there. So thank you so much for your willingness, and again, for giving us so much time today to talk through all of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, and I appreciate you saying that about the reflective bit. You know, like I said, for me, you know, there is no moment where I'm just like, oh my god, if I had only done X. That doesn't exist. I mean, I guess for me, the closest thing is, well, you know, I misplaced my trust Thursday the 10th when I was talking to Danny and Nicole, and I felt like I could trust these two fully again. And I now think that the week six HOH is, you know, inefficient. That's where that comes into play. You know, I should not have thrown that. That's my big error, right? That's the big blunder. And looking back, that's my fault. You know, I misread that conversation, and if that conversation never happens, then I play fully. And if it happened and I read it right, that I was still in a little hot water with Danny and to a lesser extent Nicole, then I don't throw it. And maybe things just go differently. But, you know, that's my fault. I messed up. Shouldn't have thrown that one. Period.
Anything else, Ian, that you want to get out on the official record before we wrap up?
I mean, the fact that Eric Stein was not here playing this one is, I don't understand how that slips through the cracks. I mean, that is a shame.
Do you know if he would have been interested?
Oh, he would have played. There's no doubt.
And do you feel like he may now potentially be at the point where he has given up on the prospect of playing again and would be more open to talking about Big Brother in more candid terms?
I think when he didn't get the call, I think it was a little bit, definitely. Yeah. I think he was a little disappointed. I think he was bummed out for sure. You know,
all right, we will continue not putting pressure on there then.
Yeah. One thing I said to him was, you know, if were you, you know, at all like an alternate or called at all? Because if my presence is what's keeping you from being there, you know, I'm going to feel bad about it. And he said he was never contacted. So,
damn. Yeah, absolutely brutal oversight for sure. So that, I believe, is going to do it for us here. Guys, we sat down, at least on the East Coast here, at 3:15 p.m. It is now just about 10:20 p.m. We took a couple bathroom breaks in there. I don't know what the final runtime is going to be. I would imagine that the move is going to be releasing this in multiple parts just for the sake of people's podcatchers and so forth. So I don't know how this is ultimately going to go up. It should be up fairly soon, and obviously is up. If you are hearing this now, and it is clearly getting to be that time of night if we are getting to this part, this meta part of the podcast. So thank you, anyone who has made it this far into whatever part of the podcast this is. Ian is, of course, on Twitter at Tulane Terry. Go be one of his 100,000 followers. He will definitely, he could definitely use it. Dom, on the other hand, does not need you to follow him at DomHRV, so don't do that. You can follow me at Colin Stone, and I've said it a couple of times already. We'll say it one last time in case anyone has found themselves enjoying this 6+ hour podcast. There's more where this came from. We have many, many interviews up with former reality contestants from several from Big Brother, tons from Survivor, a couple other shows. And furthermore, Dom and I not only have been covering reality TV on the main podcast feed that you're hearing this on for close to a decade at this point, we also do bonus episodes covering classic reality seasons over at patreon.com/Dom and Colin. We've got BB7, BB8, and BB10. All up in their entireties over there. So patreon.com/Dom and Colin if you would like more. But I think for today, that is finally going to wrap it up for us. So one last giant thank you to Ian for taking so much time. We will talk to you guys soon. Take care, everybody.